just by catching up on our sleep. This can make us feel better, sometimes much better. 2. There are other things that we can do to keep ourselves more physically fit while unemployed. Job hunters have told me they found it important to get regular exercise involving a daily walk, drink plenty of water each day. This seems silly, but I found out we tend to skip the water and get dehydrated when we're out of work. Eliminate sugar as much as possible from the diet. Take supplementary vitamins daily. No matter how many doctors and nutritionists try to tell us that we already get enough from our daily food. Eat balanced meals, not just pig out on junk food in front of the telly, and all that other stuff that our mothers always told us to do. 3. We can do something about the physical space around us. Our surroundings often mirror how we feel about ourselves. If our physical environment looks like a disaster area, that in itself can make us depressed. When we are unemployed, we can vow we will live simpler, something that maybe we've wanted to do for a long time. We can begin by taking care that each time we handle a thing, we take it all the way to its new destination. We don't just drop it on the counter, thinking that we will deal with it later. We can take care that when we take our clothes off at night, we don't just drop them on the floor, but hang them up or put them in a laundry hamper. And that when we finish eating, we put the dishes where they are going to be washed and put our food back in the refrigerator. And we can determine that when we do such things as get a screwdriver out to fix a screw that's dropped out of something, that we take the screwdriver all the way back to the toolbox or wherever its final destination is, and so on. When we determine to always put our things away in a timely fashion, neatness will start to appear in our physical environment. This can help lift our spirits immensely as our physical space mirrors an upbeat life. 4. We can get outdoors daily and take a good walk. Hiding in our cave, figuratively speaking, will only make us feel more down. Seeing green trees in season, sunlight, mountains, flowers, people, will do our heart good each day. 5. We can focus on other people and their problems, not just our own. If our unemployment is dragging on, and we're starting to have a lot of time on our hands, we can find some place in town that is dealing with people worse off than we are and go volunteer there. I'm talking food banks, hospitals, housing aid, anything dealing with kids, especially deprived kids or kids with tremendous handicaps. That sort of thing. We can do a search on Google, put in the name of our town or city plus the name of the problem we want to help with, and see what turns up. If we determine to help someone else in need while we're unemployed, we won't feel so discarded by society. And speaking of other people, we can renew our acquaintance with old friends. We can explore the friendships we already have, not because they are useful in our job hunt, but just because they are valuable human beings. A wise man named Philip Brooks used to say there are two kinds of exploration. One involves going out to explore new country. The other involves digging down more deeply into the country we already occupy. Do both when you're feeling down. 6. We can go on fun mini adventures. Often, there are portions of our surroundings that we have never explored, but a tourist would hit on the very first day they were there. I lived in New York City for a long time. Never once went up in the Empire State Building. I lived in San Francisco for years. Never once went out to the zoo. You get the point. If I lived in either of these cities today and was unemployed for any length of time, I would set out to visit places I'd never seen. We can stop obsessing about how much we lost from our past and turn our face toward the future. There are new worlds to conquer, after all. 7. We can deal with our feelings by expanding our mental horizons and learning something new. We can go read up on subjects that have always interested us, but we've never had enough time to explore. While we're unemployed, we have the time. If we can't think of any subject, there's always the human mind. The mind, after all, is what is trying hard to figure out what we should do next. The more we understand it, the better we can heal. If you're looking for suggestions, I'd read anything by Martin Seligman. There's Learned Optimism, How to Change Your Mind and Your Life, which, as one reviewer commented, vaulted me out of my funk. It has excellent chapters on dealing with depression. Or there's Seligman's 2012 book, Flourish, A Visionary New Understanding of Happiness and Well-Being. If you want to delve into improving your memory, there's Joshua Foer's Moonwalking with Einstein, The Art and Science of Remembering Everything. And last but not least, if you want to learn more about how one mind influences another mind, there is Robert B. Cialdini's Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion. All these authors have extensive videos on YouTube. Speaking of videos, there are a million free videos online where you can learn just about anything. In addition to videos, there are video casts, webcasts, podcasts, and every other kind of cast. You can type the word webcast plus the subject in which you are interested into your favorite browser like Google and then pick through whatever turns up. There are also, of course, books. From online bookstores, there are tons of e-books available, running around 10 bucks or a little more. Another subject to explore is the world around us. I love the unofficial U.S. Census, things the official U.S. Census doesn't tell you about America, by Les Krantz and Chris Smith. My favorite factoid there, because it's related to what I was talking about in our first suggestion, more than one-third of Americans take naps. Yes. 8. We can talk with our loved ones or a close friend about all the feelings we have. It's amazing how giving voice to thoughts and feelings, particularly when we don't much care for those thoughts and those feelings, causes them to lose their power over us. So we should do it. Because otherwise, stuff bottled up inside us tends to fester and grow. We don't want that. We must just take care that we don't pick the town gossip to confide in, nor a friend or loved one who just can't keep their mouth shut. You know who they are. 9. We can pound a punching bag or even some pillows to get some of the angry energy out of us. I don't know why, but it's astonishing how many of the unemployed have told me this actually helps them get rid of some of their anger. And this helps lift our depression as well. Sometimes feeling down and feeling angry seem almost to be two different sides of the same coin. If we don't have a gym in our life, we can build one at home, simply by putting a pile of pillows on top of our bed and then pounding the pillows repeatedly as hard as we can, without breaking anything in our hands, wrists, or arms. This often really helps. We are strange creatures. 10. We can make a list each day of the things that make us grateful, glad, or even happy day by day. There is a habit of mind that is deadly while we're out of work, and that is spending too much of our day, every day, brooding about what is wrong in our lives. What is wrong with people? What is wrong with our situation? What is wrong with anything and everything? By listing the things we are thankful for, we teach ourselves to focus on what precious gifts we still have, whether they be intelligence, health, or love. If we want to get over being depressed, it is crucial that we give up endless complaint. It is crucial that we come to forgiveness for any past wrongs done to us. It is crucial that we, as Baltazar Gracian put it, get used to the failings of our friends, family, and acquaintances. We are all human. We are all capable of turning our face toward the future rather than toward the past. Postscript. Millions of people in this country have no religious beliefs, but untold millions do. And it is not uncommon that for them, unemployment turns out to be a major spiritual crisis in their life. They cry out, "How could God have let this happen to me if he truly loved me?" Their faith, far from helping them out of depression, often plunges them into it. They write me and ask for some help and advice. Here is what I tell them. We can revisit our picture of God and how he works in this world. In the Christian church, for example, the creed does not begin with, "I believe there is a God." It begins with, "I believe in God." I think we all understand this distinction between believing something about a friend of ours, say that she is tall or smart, versus believing in that friend. To believe in someone is to trust them, and to trust that they feel toward us as they say they feel. We can, instead of abandoning our faith, put some energy into rethinking our faith on a higher level. Some 89% of us in the U.S. say we believe in God, but the question is, what kind of God do we believe in? Half a century ago, a man wrote a book titled, "Your God is Too Small." Unemployment or any crisis often reveals how poor and small our concept of God is. It is small because it holds God responsible for everything that happens in the world. Each of us has to figure this out for ourselves. But since people have asked me what I think, after 90 years on this earth, my thoughts ramble along in this fashion. In the Christian faith, Jesus said the most important thing in the world, to God, was that we love him. Robots can't love. He has to give us freedom so we can choose to love or not. With that freedom, however, comes the possibility that we will make wrong choices, and thus introduce tragedy into the world. Look at the mess the world is in right now. Look at Congress. God didn't do that. Well then, what does God do? To what larger conception of God might we press? Let's try this. Imagine that you have in your dining room a fine wooden chair, which one day has its back broken off completely, I mean into smithereens, by a guest in your home. You run down the street to summon a carpenter who lives nearby. He comes and examines the chair. He pronounces the chair unrepairable. "But," he says, "I think I could make a fine wooden stool out of the remainder of the chair for you." And so he spends much time shaping, polishing, and sanding it, and fashioning out of the former chair a fine stool, more resplendent than anything you have ever dreamed. He inlays it with precious metals, and soon it is the treasure of your house. This is, of course, a parable, and I know you understand it, but let me underline a couple of key points in it. First of all, the carpenter did not break the chair. Your house guest did that. But the carpenter came quickly, and with all his art and powers, he tried, first of all, to see if he could repair it. Finding it was too late for that, he determined to make of it something even finer than it had been before, and he labored mightily to that end. A beautiful stool was the result. A faith that thinks God is responsible for our unemployment, and he could have and should have prevented it, needs to grow up. It is too small a faith. It has too small a God. While we are out of work, we can reach toward a larger conception of our God and of ourselves, for to believe in God has the power to lift us out of depression, unless our God is too small. We can realize that religion isn't necessarily a blessing. Much depends on whether it is healthy religion or unhealthy religion, your choice. The distinction between them is spelled out in a chart in the PDF files included with this audiobook. The first distinction being that a healthy religion is obsessed with gratitude, while an unhealthy one is obsessed with guilt. Feelings are often a messenger bringing gifts, if only we open our eyes to see them. If our feelings while we are out of work push us to get more sleep, drink more water, get more physically fit, get outdoors more, look harder at other people who are worse off than we are, renew old neglected friendships, embark on many adventures, expand the horizons of our mind, and rethink our faith, then that is a gift indeed, a great gift. Appendix C, A Guide to Choosing a Career Coach or Counselor. All readers of this book divide into two families or groups. The first group are those who find the book is all they need, particularly if they do the exercises in Chapter 5 successfully on their own. The second group are those who find they need a little bit of extra help. Either they bog down in their effort to complete the whole book, or they start the exercises in Chapter 5 and then get stuck at some point, so they want some additional help. If you decide you need one. Fortunately, there are a lot of people out there anxious to help you with your job hunt or career change in case this book isn't sufficient by itself. They go by various names: career coach, career counselor, career development specialist, you name it. They're willing to help you for a fee, because this is how they make their living. That fee will usually equal the fee charged by other types of counselors in town, say, a good psychologist. That will range from about $40 an hour in rural areas on up to, you don't want to know. The fee may be charged by the hour, recommended, or as one large lump sum up front, definitely not recommended. And most towns or cities of any size have free or almost free help too, even though it's likely to be in a group and not face to face with an individual counselor. Now, about those coaches or counselors who charge to help you. There are some simply excellent ones out there. In fact, I wish I could say that everyone who hangs out a sign in this business could be completely recommended. But, alas and alack, they can't all be. This career coaching or career counseling field is largely unregulated. And even where there is some kind of certification, resulting in their being able to put a lot of degree-sounding initials after their name, that doesn't really tell you much. It means a lot to them, of course. In many cases, they purchased those initials with their blood, sweat, and tears. Although a few, sad to say, got the initials after their name by mail order or after one long weekend of training. Tisk, tisk. But, oh well, no different, I suppose, from a lot of other professions. Some people are always looking for shortcuts. I used to try to explain what all those initials meant. There is a veritable alphabet soup of them, with new ones born every year. But no more. I've learned from more than 40 years of experience in this field that 99.4% of all job hunters and career changers don't care a fig about these initials. All they want to know is, do you know how to help me find a job? Or, more specifically, do you know how to help me find my dream job, one that matches the gifts, skills, and experience that I have, one that makes me excited to get up in the morning and excited to go to bed at night knowing I helped make this earth a little better place to be in? If so, I'll hire you. If not, I'll fire you. How to lose your shirt or skirt. So, bye-bye initials. Let us start instead with this basic truth. All coaches and counselors divide basically into three groups. A. Those who are honest, compassionate, and caring, and know what they're doing. B. Those who are honest, but don't know what they're doing. And C. Those who are dishonest and merely want your money. Large amounts in a lump sum and up front. These are often so-called executive counseling firms, some executive counseling firms, rather than individual counselors. In other words, you've got compassionate, caring people in the same field with bums and crooks. Your job, if you want help and don't want to waste your money, is to learn how to distinguish the one from the other. It would help, of course, if someone could just give you a list of those who are firmly in the first category, honest and know what they're doing. But unfortunately, no one, including me, has such a list, or ever has had. You've got to do your own homework or research here, and your own interviewing, in your chosen geographical area. And if you're too lazy to take the time and trouble to do this research, you will deserve what you get. Why is it that you, and only you, can do this particular research? Well, let's say a friend tells you to go see so-and-so. He's a wonderful coach or counselor, but unhappily when you meet him, he reminds you of your Uncle Harry, whom you detest. Bummer. But no one except you knows that you've always disliked your Uncle Harry. That's why no one else can do this research for you, because the real question is not who is best, but who is best for you. Those last two words demand that it be you who makes the call. A special word here to those considering paying any firm that focuses on executives or people who make or would like to make a high salary. This warning is regarding firms, not individual counselors. If you are an executive, you are considered a fair target for any scam the mind can imagine. New ones appear every year. I have consulted with the Federal Trade Commission in Washington and state's attorneys general over the years, where they have described the scams to me in detail. I have collected news items, done individual interviews with those who got taken, and I wish I could tell you about individual firms, but that's not my job. Do your own research. If you are considering signing up with any such firm, Google them first. You will come across timely research about any firm. Example, https://corcodils.com/blog/3219/the-ladders-how-the-scam-works-2. If you are too lazy to do this research and subsequently get taken, let me share the words a Scotsman once said to me when I got taken. I'm sorry you lost your money, but you didn't do your homework. Now, for all my other readers, your dilemma is between categories A and B mentioned earlier. How do you find an honest counselor who knows what they're doing and can give you a little bit of help if you bog down in using this book, most especially with Chapter 5? The first bright idea that will occur to you might be something along the lines of, well, I'll just see who Bowles recommends. Sorry, no such luck. I rarely, if ever, recommend anyone. Some of the coaches or counselors listed in the sampler presented in Appendix D, which can be found in the PDF files included with this audiobook, try to claim that their very listing here constitutes a recommendation from me. Oh, come on. They're there because they asked to be. I ask a few questions, but I don't have time to do any thorough research on them. This sampler is more akin to the Yellow Pages than it is to Consumer Reports. Let me repeat this, as I have for 40 years now, and repeat it very loudly. The listing of a career counselor or coach in this book does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by me. Never has meant that, never will. Any counselor or coach listed here who claims that it does, either in their ads or brochures or publicity, gets permanently removed from this sampler the following year after I find out about it and without warning. This is not a hall of fame. It is just a sampler of names of those who have asked to be listed and have answered some reasonable questions. Consider the listings as just a starting point for your search. You must check them out. You must do your own homework, You must do your own research. A guide to choosing a good career coach. So how do you go about this research toward the goal of finding a good career coach or counselor if you decide you need more help than this book can give you? Well, you start by collecting three names of career coaches or counselors in your geographical area. How do you find those names? Several ways. First, you can get names from your friends. Ask if any of them have ever used a career coach or counselor, and if so, did they like them? And if so, what is that coach's or counselor's name? And how do you get in touch with them so you can ask them some questions before deciding whether you want to sign up with them or not? Second, you can get some names from the sampler in Appendix D in the PDF files. See if there are any career coaches or counselors who are near you. They may know how you can find still other names in your community. Need more names? Try the Yellow Pages under such headings as Aptitude and Employment Testing, Career and Vocational Counseling, and Personnel Consultants. Once you have three names, it's time to go do some comparison shopping. You want to talk with all three of them and decide which of the three, if any, you want to hook up with. What will this initial interview cost you with each coach or counselor? The answer to that is easy. When first setting up an appointment, ask. You do have the right to inquire ahead of time how much they're going to have to charge you for the exploratory interview. Some, a few, will charge you nothing for the initial interview. One of the brightest counselors I know says this: I don't like to charge for the first interview because I want to be free to tell them that I can't help them if for some reason we just don't hit it off. However, do not expect that most coaches or counselors can afford to give you this exploratory interview for nothing. If they did that and got a lot of requests like yours, they would never make a living. If this is not an individual counselor but a firm trying to sell you a pay-me first package up front, I guarantee they will give you the initial interview for free. They plan to use that intake interview, as they call it, to sell you a much more expensive program. They will even ask you to bring your spouse or partner along. If they can't persuade one of you, maybe they can persuade the other. The questions to ask. When you are face-to-face with a coach or counselor, you ask each of them the same questions. Keep a little pad, notebook, or smartphone with you so you can write down their answers. After visiting the three places you chose for your comparison shopping, you can go home, sit down, put your feet up, look over your notes that evening, and compare those places. You'll find a helpful chart in the PDF files included with this audiobook to compare these five questions. What is your program? Who will be counseling, and how long has this person been counseling? What is your success rate? What is the cost of your services? Is there a contract up front? If so, may I see it, please, and take it home with me? You need to decide A, whether you want none of the three, or B, one of the three, and if so, which one? Remember, you don't have to choose any of the three coaches if you didn't really care for any of them. If that is the case, go choose three new names out of the Yellow Pages or wherever, dust off the notebook, and go out again. It may take a few more hours to find what you want, but the wallet, the purse, the job hunt, and the life you save will be your own. As you look over your notes, you will soon realize there is no definitive way for you to determine a career coach's intentions. It's something you'll have to smell out as you go along. But here are some clues. Bad vibes on up to really bad vibes. If they give you the feeling that everything will be done for you by them, including interpretation of tests and decision-making about what this means you should do or where you should do it, rather than asserting that you are going to have to do almost all the work, with their basically being your coach, give them 15 bad points. You want to learn how to do this for yourself. You're going to be job hunting again, you know. That's the nature of our world today. Job hunting is a repetitive activity in human life. If you don't like the counselor, period, give them 150 bad points. I don't care what their expertise is. If you don't like them, you're going to have a rough time getting what you want. I guarantee it. Rapport is everything. If you ask how long this particular counselor has been doing this, and they get huffy or give a double-barreled answer such as, I've had 18 years experience in the business and career counseling world, give them 20 bad points. What that may mean is 17 and a half years as a fertilizer salesman and 1.5 year doing career counseling. Persist. How long have you been with this firm? And how long have you been doing formal career coaching or counseling as you are here? You don't want someone who's brand new to advising job hunters. They may call this their practice, but what they mean is they are practicing on you. If they try to answer the question of their experience by pointing to their degrees or credentials, give them 3 bad points. Degrees or credentials tell you they've passed certain tests of their qualifications, but often these tests bear more on their expertise at career assessment than on their knowledge of creative job hunting. If, when you ask about that firm's success rate, they say they have never had a client who failed to find a job no matter what, give them 500 bad points. They're lying. I have studied career counseling programs for more than 40 years, have attended many, have studied records at state and federal offices, and have hardly ever seen a program that placed more than 86% of their clients tops in their best years. And it goes downhill from there. A prominent executive counseling firm was reported by the Attorney General's Office of New York State to have placed only 38 out of 550 clients, a 93% failure rate. On the other hand, if they make it clear that they have had a good success rate, but if you fail to work hard at the whole process, then there is no guarantee you're going to find a job, give them 3 stars. If any counselor shows you letters from ecstatically happy former clients, but when you ask to talk to some of those clients, you get stonewalled, give them 200 bad points. Here is a job hunter's letter about his experience with an executive counseling firm he was considering. I asked to speak to a former client or clients. You would have thought I asked to speak to Elvis. The counselor stammered and stuttered and gave me a million excuses why I couldn't talk to some of these satisfied former clients. None of the excuses sounded legitimate to me. We went back and forth for about 30 minutes. Finally, he excused himself and went to speak to his boss, the owner. The next thing I knew, I was called into the owner's office for a more personal sales pitch. We spoke for about 45 minutes as he tried to convince me to use his service. When I told him I was not ready to sign up, he became angry and asked my counselor why I had been put before the committee if I wasn't ready to commit. The counselor claimed I had given a verbal commitment at our last meeting. The owner then turned to me and said I seemed to have a problem making a decision and that he did not want to do business with me. I was shocked. They had turned the whole story around to make it look like it was my fault. I felt humiliated. In retrospect, the whole process felt like dealing with a used car salesman. They used pressure tactics and intimidation to try to get what they wanted. As you have probably gathered, more than anything else, this experience made me angry. If you are dealing with a career counseling firm and you ask what is the cost of their services, and they reply that it is a lump sum that must all be paid up front before you start or shortly after you start, all at once or in rapid installments, give them 300 bad points. We're talking about firms here, not the average individual counselor or coach. The basic problem with firms is that both the good guys and the crooks do this. The good guys operate on the theory that if you give them a large sum up front, you will then be really committed to the program. The crooks operate on the theory that if you give them a large sum up front, they don't have to give you anything back, except endless excuses and subterfuge after a certain date, quickly reached. And the trouble is that there is absolutely no way for you to distinguish crook from good guy at first impression. They only reveal their true nature after they've got all your money. And by that time, you have no legal way to get it back, no matter what they verbally promised. Sometimes, the written contract, there is always a written contract when you are dealing with the bad guys, and they will probably ask your partner to sign it too, will claim to provide for an almost complete refund at any time until you reach a cutoff date in the program, which the contract specifies. Unfortunately, fraudulent firms bend over backward to be extra nice, extra available, and extra helpful to you from the time you first walk in until that cutoff point is reached. Therefore, when the cutoff point for getting a refund has passed, you let it pass because you are very satisfied with their past services and believe there will be many more weeks of the same. Only there aren't. At fraudulent firms, once the cutoff point is passed, the career counselor suddenly becomes virtually impossible for you to get a hold of. Call after call will not be returned. You will say to yourself, "What happened?" Well, what happened, my friend, is that you paid up in full. They have all the money they're ever going to get out of you, and now they want to move on. Let me repeat. With firms that make you sign a contract and pay basically up front, there is no way to distinguish the good guys from the crooks. The only safe counseling is one with no contract, and you just pay for each hour as you use it. I have tried for years to think of some way around this dilemma, to be fair to the good guys, but there just is none. So if you decide to pay up front, be sure it is money you can afford to lose. If money is a problem for you, hourly coaching. Most career coaches or counselors charge by the hour. You pay only for each hour as you use it, according to their set rate. Each time you keep an appointment, you pay them at the end of that hour for their help, according to that rate. Period. Fini. You never owe them any money, unless you made an appointment and failed to keep it. You can stop seeing them at any time if you feel you're not getting the help you wish. The fee varies greatly. It can range from $75 an hour on up to $350 an hour and beyond. It often keeps pace with the fees of psychiatrists or psychologists in that neck of the woods. Counselors in cities tend to charge more than counselors out in the country. That fee is for individual time with a career coach or counselor. If you can't afford that fee, ask whether they also run groups. If they do, the fee will be much less. And in one of those delightful ironies of life, since you get a chance to listen to problems that other job hunters in your group are having, the group will often give you more help than an individual session with a counselor would have. Not always, but often. It's always ironic when cheaper and more helpful go hand in hand. If the career counselor in question does offer groups, there should, again, never be a contract. The charge should be payable at the end of each session, and you should be able to drop out at any time without further cost if you decide you are not getting the help you want. There are some career counselors who run free, or almost free, job hunting workshops through local churches, synagogues, chambers of commerce, community colleges, adult education programs, and the like, as their community service or pro bono work, as it is technically called. I have had reports of workshops from a number of places in the U.S. and Canada. They exist in other parts of the world as well. If money is a problem for you in getting help with your job hunt, ask around to see if workshops exist in your community. Your Chamber of Commerce will know, or your church or synagogue. If your location is a problem for you, distance coaching or telephone counseling. The assumption from the beginning was that career counseling would always take place face-to-face, both of you, counselor and job hunter, together in the same room, just like career counseling's close relatives, marriage counseling, or even AA. Of course, a job hunter might, on occasion, phone his or her counselor the day before an interview to get some last-minute tips or to answer some questions that a prospective interviewer might ask tomorrow. What is different today is that in some cases, career counseling is being conducted exclusively over the phone from start to finish. Some counselors now report that they haven't laid eyes on over 90% of their clients and wouldn't know them if they bumped into them on a street corner. I call this distance coaching or telephone counseling. With the invention of the internet, with the invention of internet telephoning, we are witnessing the death of distance. That is to say, the death of distance as an obstacle. The world, as the wonderful New York Times columnist Thomas Friedman has famously written, is in effect flat. An increasing number of counselors or executive coaches are doing this distance counseling. This increasing availability of distance counseling is good news and bad news. Why good news? Well, in the old days, you might be a job hunter in some remote village with a population of only 85, back in the hills somewhere. Or you might be living somewhere in France or in China, miles from any career counselor or coach, and so be totally out of luck. Now, these days, you can be anywhere in the world. But as long as you have the internet on your desk or in your hand, you can still connect with the best distance counseling there is. And the bad news? Well, just because a counselor or coach does distance counseling or phone counseling doesn't mean they're really good at doing it. Some are superb, but some are not. So you're still going to have to research any distance counselor very carefully. It is altogether too easy for a counselor to get sloppy doing distance counseling. For example, browsing the newspapers while you are telling some long personal story, etc., to which they are giving only the briefest attention. Of course, the increasingly wider use of video calling programs such as Skype may cure that. You must always remember, distance counseling, attractive as it will be for many, as necessary as it will be for some, definitely has its limits. To the caveman, the technology that enables all this to happen in this 21st century would be jaw-droppingly awesome. But good career counseling or coaching is not just about technology. What is really, truly awesome in the end is our power to help each other on this earth, and how much that power resides not in techniques or technology, though these things are important, but in each of us just being a good human being, and a loving human being. A sampler. The following appendix, which you can find in the PDF files included with this audiobook, is exactly what its name implies, a sampler. Were I to list all the career coaches and counselors there are in the U.S., never mind the world, we would end up with a very large encyclopedia. In fact, some people have published encyclopedic lists of counselors and businesses in particular cities or states. Your local bookstore or library should have these in their job hunting section under such titles as How to Get a Job in or Job Hunting in Denver or wherever. Now, as to this sampler here, let me emphasize this. I did not choose the places listed here. Rather, they asked to be listed, and I pass on their information to you simply as a suggestion when you're trying to find decent help of where to begin your investigations. Do keep in mind that many truly helpful places and coaches are not listed here. If you discover such a coach or such a place, which is very good at helping people with parachute or what I call creative job hunting, do send us their pertinent information. We will ask them, as we do all the listings here, a few intelligent questions, and if they sound okay, we will add that place in next year's edition as a possible place for your consideration and investigation. Yearly readers of this book will notice that we do remove people from this sampler without warning. First of all, there are accidents. We drop places we didn't mean to, but a typographical error was made somehow. It happens. Oops. Counselor or coach, call this to our attention. We'll put you back in next year. But accidents aside, we do deliberately remove the following. Places that have moved and don't bother to send us their new address. Coaches and counselors, if you are listed here, we expect you to be a professional at communication. When you move, your first priority should be to let us know immediately. As one exemplary counselor wrote, "You are the first person I am contacting on my updated letterhead, hot off the press just today." So it should always be if you want to continue to be listed here. A number of places get removed every year precisely because of their sloppiness in keeping us up to date with their phone and other contact information. Other causes for removal? Places that have disconnected their telephone or otherwise suggest that they have gone out of business. Places that our readers lodge complaints against with us as being unhelpful or even obnoxious. The complaints may be falsified, but we can't take that chance. Places that change their personnel, and the new person has never even heard of parachute or creative job search techniques. College services that we discover, belatedly, serve only their own. Counseling firms that employ salespeople as the initial intake person that a job hunter meets. If you discover that any of the places listed in this sampler fall into any of the above categories, you would be doing a great service to our other readers by dropping us a line and telling us so. What kind of questions do we ask? This directory appears nowhere but in this book, so we may presume you are interested in this book's approach, and if you need a little help, it is help with the process in this book. We tried being broader in the past. There are obviously excellent counselors out there who have never heard of this book, but it turned out that our readers wanted counselors and places that have some expertise with parachute and can help job hunters or career changers finish the job hunt in this book. So if they've never even heard of parachute, we don't list them anymore. But even among those who have, we can't automatically assume they're good at what they do, no matter how many questions we ask them. So we list them and leave the research to you. You must do your own sharp questioning before you decide to go with anyone. If you don't take time to research two or three places before choosing a counselor, you will deserve whatever you get, or more to the point, don't get. So please, do some research. The listings that follow are alphabetical within each state, with counselors listed by their name in alphabetical order according to their last name. Some offer group career counseling, some offer testing, some offer access to job banks, etc. Ask. One final note. Places and counselors listed here have said they counsel anyone. 99% of them can absolutely be trusted in this. A few, however, may turn out to have restrictions unknown to us. We counsel only women, or we only deal with alumni, etc. If that turns out to be the case, your time isn't necessarily wasted. They may be able to refer you to somebody helpful. So, ask them. Who else in the area can you tell me about who helps with job searches? And are there any among them that you think are particularly effective? Also, write us and let us know about the limited counseling so we can remove them from this sampler next year. Area codes. If you call a phone number in the sampler that is any distance geographically from you, and they tell you this number cannot be completed as dialed, the most likely explanation is that the area code was changed, maybe some time ago. Throughout the U.S. now, area codes are subdividing constantly, sometimes more than once during a short time span. We ask counselors listed here to notify us when the area code changes, but some do and some don't. Anyway, call information and check, or look up their phone number on the web. Of course, if you're calling a local counselor, you won't need the area code, unless you live in one of the metropolitan areas in the U.S. that requires 10-digit dialing. The final word, notes from the author. The focus of this book is not on me. It's on you. You are the heroes and heroines of this book. You are the ones who struggle to make life work, who tell me of your victories and defeats. You are the inventive ones. You are the ones who tell me solutions to job hunting or career-changing problems that puzzle me. I know that this book demands a lot of every reader, just as life demands a lot of all of us. And I am amazed at how many of the over 10 million people who have bought this book, in one of its annual editions, are willing to sit down and do the hard work of the self-inventory in chapters 4 and 5. It takes more than one person to create a book. My particular thanks go to Lisa Westmoreland and Marcy M. Bowles. Lisa is an executive editor at 10 Speed Press and has helped greatly with the form and updating of this edition. And Marcy has helped greatly with the typing of this manuscript. My gratitude also to George Young for his help with updating my veterans handout. This is a book about jobs, but more importantly, it is a book about life and hope. I have learned that the secret of living is not to set as our goal a happy life, nor even a successful life, as the world measures success, but a victorious life, meeting the obstacles and challenges that life naturally throws into our path, and by grit, determination, and grace, overcoming them all. And lucky those who find love on their journey. I quote from what a woman dying of ALS once said. Throughout all this, I have learned that the only thing that matters is love. When you live in love, everything else just falls into place. May you find such love in your life. I have, with my wonderful wife, Marcy. But there are others, too. Were it not for this book and social media sites such as Facebook, I would never have met you. Never have known so many valiant and courageous souls as you have faced and faced down so many difficulties that might have defeated me. I don't just appreciate my readers, I admire my readers. You are such an inspiration to me. I am a grateful man, and this is the place, each year, where I recite my litany of love and gratitude for all the people in my life, past and present. First of all, I am enchanted by every moment of my life that I get to spend with such a wondrous woman as my wife, Marcy. I treasure her love, brains, wit, and caring. For example, back in 2014, I badly injured my back while vacationing and tossing heavy luggage around over in Paris and the UK. Always in excellent health, until then, my recovery has been slow but steady. Marcy, coincidentally, a licensed nurse, has created the most loving, beautiful, healing environment all around me, for which I shall ever be grateful. I'm grateful, too, for Marcy's grown children from a previous marriage, Janice, Marcel, and Adlai, Amy, and their kids, Logan and Aiden. They are wonderful to me. I am grateful beyond measure for the family that brought me into this world. I had a really wonderful mom and dad, and I loved the brother I grew up with, the famous reporter and martyr Don Bowles, and my one sister, Anne. I am so grateful for my children, Stephen, Mark, Gary, and Sharon, and my grandchildren, all 10 of them. We lost Mark in 2012 to a massive cerebral hemorrhage at age 58. I wept over that a lot. He lived with me for 6 out of the last 12 years of his life and was the author of our book, Job Hunting Online. He was a treasure. I am so grateful for my 3 remaining children and their families, plus their most loving mother, my first wife, Jan, who shares in all our family gatherings. As for friends, what would any of us do without our friends? I want to express my gratitude for my dearest friend, besides Marcy, Daniel Porro of Geneva, Switzerland. We taught together for 2 weeks every summer for 19 years. Also for Dave Swanson, plus my international friends, Brian McIver of Ireland, John Webb and Madeline Leichner of Germany, Yves Lermoussi of Chester fame, who came from Belgium, Pete Hawkins of Liverpool, England, Deborah Angel McDougall of Scotland, Byung-Joo Cho of South Korea, Tom O'Neill of New Zealand, and in this country, the late Howard Figler, beloved friend and co-author of our Manual for Career Counselors, Marty Nemko, Joel Garfinkel, Dick Nodell, Rich Feller, Dick Geither, Warren Farrell, Chuck Young, Susan Joyce, and the folks over at 10 Speed Press in Berkeley, California, now an imprint of the Crown Publishing Group of Penguin Random House, plus Crown's head, Maya Mavji, who has been more than kind to me. Of course, with the passage of time, friends do die. I think it is important to remember them with deep gratitude for their lives well lived. I still think of Howard Figler, whom we lost in February 2015. He was the co-author with me of The Career Counselor's Handbook, 2nd edition, 2007. He and I had years of fun writing together. We also lost Judy Grutter, expert on testing and assessments. She died in December of 2014. Prior to that, we lost J. Conrad Levinson in October of 2013. He was the popular author of many books on guerrilla marketing. And prior to him, we lost my longtime publisher, Phil Wood, in December 2010. He was my publisher from the day I first wrote Parachute. He was a dear man, and I owe him more than I can ever say for helping Parachute find its audience, and for letting me have great control over the annual editions. Parachute would never have sold over 10 million copies, as it has, if it were not for him. I much appreciate the staff over at 10 Speed, whom I know best there. That includes Aaron Wehner, publisher, Lisa Westmoreland, executive editor and my best editor ever, Natalie Mulford, Mary Gill, Chris Barnes, and George Young. And again, my special thanks to my readers for buying my books, trusting my counsel, and following your dream. In concluding my litany of gratitude, I must be sure to include our Creator. It is not fashionable these days to talk about one's faith, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'm very quiet about my faith. It's just there. But I want to quietly acknowledge that it is the source of whatever grace, wisdom, or compassion I have ever found or shared with others. I have all my life been a committed Christian, a devoted follower of Jesus Christ, and an Episcopalian/Anglican. I was an ordained priest in that church for 50 years. I thank my Creator every night for such a life, such a wonderful mission as He has given me, to help millions of people make their lives really count for something, as we all go spinning through space here on Spaceship Earth. A grammar and language note. I want to explain 4 points of grammar in this book of mine: pronouns, commas, italics, and spelling. My unorthodox use of them invariably offends unemployed English teachers so much that instead of finishing the book, they immediately write to apply for a job as my editor. Let me explain. Throughout this book, I often use the apparently plural pronouns, they, them, and their, after singular antecedents, such as, you must approach someone for a job and tell them what you can do. This sounds strange and even wrong to those who know English well. To be sure, we all know there is another pronoun, you, that may be either singular or plural. But few of us realize that the pronouns they, them, and their were also once treated as both plural and singular in the English language. This changed at a time in English history when agreement in number became more important than agreement as to gender.